This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Oh, back for some more creme de la crap, Dave.
Creme de la crap, Rog. Talking of creme de la crap, we could go to almost anything here. We could go to the Golden Globes. We could go to the Ballon d'Or. We could go to our appearance in Hair and suntan, so well refreshed after the Christmas Hanukkah vacation on the Men in Blazers show Monday night.
You look so good in the old panic room this weekend.
Just rested. Just well rested,
yeah.
Rog.
I've been on the juice cleanse. I think that was
people the juice cleanse.
People thought we'd had some work done.
Yeah. Had a hair coloured.
Nope.
People suggested I might be wearing a wig or a weave.
Yep.
Even.
Neither.
Neither. Spray tan.
Well, I'm going to come clean. Happen. The truth was we put some, like, if you didn't see the show, because there was a college football game on, right, programmed hard against us.
What, any college football game?
Yeah, I thought, well, at least the SEC fans will tune in.
Yeah.
It's one or two of them that like football.
Exactly.
We put in this like powdery thing into our hair.
Yeah, they're like fibres. They're little almost like metallic fibres that go in your hair.
One minute you're a bald man.
Yeah.
The next minute you look like Phil Oakey from the Human League in the Don't You Want Me video. It's amazing.
I look like a soprano, Rog. The second I did it, I looked like a sort of a paid assassin.
Well, we should say we put on a spray tan. Because the goal was we wanted to look a little more serious,
yeah,
a little more American, a little more like professional sportscasters.
Professional
in this
NBC
country.
Sportscasters.
We did a sophisticated kind of, we got old Silver. What's his first name?
Nate.
To do a...
came in our panic room down in Brazil.
He's a lovely bloke. He is a lovely bloke.
GFOP.
We got him to do like a field study.
Yeah.
And he came back to us and he reported that 82% of all leading American sportscasters...
Yeah.
Do what Lord Grantham would refer to as something very Latin with the hair.
Yeah. A little bit of hair dye.
So we put in the hair dye.
Well, we put in microfibers that bound, Rog. They bound chemically.
And that chemical is plutonium.
To our hair. And they were sealed with hairspray.
Yep.
And...
And funny enough, we got notes after the show from NBC Sports that we should possibly consider staying
doing
that
this
way.
Every week. We look more like proper NBC Sports.
Did feel good.
Did it?
Oh, it felt great. Oh. The consensus from our listeners is that I look like the bastard offspring of Mr. Molesley and George Hamilton.
Yeah, are these are the listeners. How about the watchers? How about the viewers?
Oh, I don't think of it as that. I don't like people who just sit there and voyeurs in the corner,
exactly.
Just watching.
Don't look at me. What are you looking at? What are you looking at?
They thought you looked like Pitbull. If Pitbull and Paulie Walnuts had a baby. But we're going to...
I like that.
We're back to breaking bald on Monday night. We're going to go full... Old white English people. By the way, talking about the show, Spotters Badges, that was the first week that we've given out monocle-wearing eagle patches designed by great GFOP Ian Hutchison.
Yeah, they're a wonderful patch.
To anyone who sends in a suggestion from that weekend's action that we would not otherwise have put it on the show, hashtag GFOP Eagle Eyes.
Yes.
For producer Jonathan Williamson.
Yeah.
We gave out four from last week, David.
Wow.
Including Morgan Persky.
Yeah.
Who came up with last week's hashtag, creme de la crap.
We love creme de la crap.
So keep your ravens coming. God, they've had one sad part of the week.
Which was?
Well, there's been two. I'm trying not to talk about the FA Cup. So let's talk about the Golden Globes.
Oh, I know. Golden Globes, Rog.
How did our theme song not get a single nomination, David?
Well, it is the Hollywood Foreign Press, Rog. And many have called into question the, you know, the appropriateness of Hollywood Foreign Press, who seem... mainly to be Serbian, perhaps not big fans of dancehall ska, Rog.
Oh, damn it, man. A bit FIFA-ish, I say match fixy.
I'll tell you, there is an amazing Venn diagram. It's almost a single circle, Rog. FIFA Executive Committee and the Hollywood Foreign Press. They are very, very similar outfits.
Oh, God, but we'll chat about FIFA in a minute. But I'll say the highlight for me, many highlights. I loved it.
Yeah.
Tina and Amy.
Yeah.
Doing who?
Great friends of the pod.
They are, actually. Who would you rather?
Yeah.
Watching them do Would You Rather in front of the television viewing audience of millions.
Yeah.
I suggested that they should have done Mrs. Patmore or Dana Plato. I thought that one would have really...
Yeah, that would have rung. That would have rung for them.
It would have really brought... But it was amazing. Clive Owen.
Yeah.
He looked like Mr. Molesley had done his hair.
Wow.
And but who's a better tall and small combo, David, from that night?
I love this.
Salma Hayek and Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
Or Melissa McCarthy and Juliana Rancic.
Wow.
Which would you play in your midfield, in the heart of your midfield?
I think Salma Hayek, she would be pretty vicious without possession.
Yeah,
I think
off the
ball.
Possession. Off the ball.
Off the ball. She would be pretty vicious, Salma Hayek. So of all of those people, I like the idea. Kevin Hart, too distracted. I think he churuns, but he doesn't dolo. I can't see Kevin Hart getting back. You can see him going forward and getting all overexcited.
Yeah, Mourinho wouldn't like
Kevin
Hart.
No, he's not a Mourinho kind of player.
Yeah, you ship him out.
He's not a Mourinho kind of player.
Yeah, but Rancic is not what she was. I think the toll of football and the World Cup and no break, it seems that physically she's taken a toll on her.
She's smart, though, Juliana. She's smart. She sees the game. She can see a pass. She often releases a pass, Rog, and you don't know who she's passing to. And then she just puts the ball into space. And it's amazing how often, you know, Kelly Osbourne is suddenly there to go and pick it right up.
Oh, Kelly Osbourne. She is the Stuart Downing of entertainment.
Resurgent. Yep. Resurgent.
All it needed was a change of club and a shift in position.
Yeah, totally.
Different
Melissa
animal.
McCarthy, I don't know. I don't know Melissa McCarthy. Still waiting. Jury's out for me on Melissa McCarthy.
She's got to prove herself.
Got to prove herself.
Again and again and again. I tell you, Jared Leto.
Yeah.
He looked like he'd taken a photo of Andy Carroll to his plastic surgeon.
Not a bad idea.
And said, this one.
Not a bad
he's
idea.
He's a shagger.
New Andy Carroll is amazing, Rog.
What are the highlights?
What, of the Golden Globes? Yeah. I don't know. I didn't watch a lot of the Golden Globes this year,
Rog. Jeffrey Tambor? Yay, Jeffrey Tambor.
You seem to have watched more Golden Globes than you even have football. No, that's not possible.
That was the closest. Seeing Jeffrey Tambor get his Golden Globe, I think it may be the closest we will get to seeing what it would have looked like. Yep. If Steven Gerrard had won the Premier League.
Lady Edith had a bit of a moment, Rod. She had a bit of a wobble.
She did have a wobble.
Joanne Froggatt, I think that's her name.
Joanne Froggatt?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is her name.
She won, Rog.
Yep, she did. She got an award for...
Pretending. I tell you, it's a pretty good acting job, pretending to love Bates.
She got her Golden Globe for bravery.
Yeah.
For kissing Mr. Bates on the mouth, which I think... Is acting.
She should have got a Purple Heart.
I know it is acting's version of a Purple Heart. Yeah. I thought it was an incredible moment. And Lady Edith, she did wobble.
Yeah.
She did wobble a little bit.
GFOP.
Oh, David, I'm thrilled for her. Joanne Froggatt. Yeah. Dominic West from The Affair.
Yeah, another GFOP.
Golden Globe. Can you hear them, David? The whole of Hollywood is talking about the Men in Blazers bump.
It's really, we made a big difference. We actually might have viewers who are members of the Hollywood Foreign Press.
They talk like that. That's the clue. Amy Adams, a bit worried about her.
More Belgians than Dutch, I would imagine. Amy Adams. You worried about Amy Adams?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, we love a ginge though, Rog.
I didn't like her dress.
Really?
The colour kind of washed her out.
Yeah.
I think she needs to hire Jack Colback as a stylist. He's a bloke who kind of knows what colours do and don't go well with the ginge.
Yeah. Well, we've never talked about this. What kind of dresses do you like? What kind of an award show frock do you enjoy, Rog?
If I was going to go to the Golden Globes next year to
if
pick
Mrs.
up our
B,
soundtrack.
Yeah, and a Mrs. B's going with you, and Mrs. B says, whoa, what kind of a frock would you like to see me
I'd
in,
show her the Crystal Palace cheerleaders.
Claret and blue.
Is there any other answer?
Claret and blue.
Is there any other answer? What would you show?
I think claret and blue is an excellent combination. Yellow and green, canary. Doing something football related is a very good idea.
I've written my speech.
Yeah. You have?
Yeah.
Already?
Yeah.
How does it go?
I thought we were just going to go up to the microphone and just lean into the microphone and say, courage, and walk off.
Is there even a category for television show theme tune?
Yeah, best there isn't, Alex.
Best original song.
Best original song?
Yeah.
Oh, best original song. So not theme tune. Interesting.
I think Randy Newman wins it every year by contract. We don't stand a chance.
There are many years at the Academy Awards where he is the only person who is nominated.
One award ceremony.
Yeah.
I do. I have no interest in talking about this week. The Ballon d'Or.
Oh, Le Ballon d'Or. People very upset with Roy Hodgson putting Javier Mascherano number one on his list.
I think it's a piece of elevated wisdom.
Yeah.
That whole event is grotesque. Honestly, it's become as synthetic as a Eurovision Song Contest, David.
Yeah, it's interesting. Simon Doonan came on the show this week, though, and spoke out in defence of Lionel Messi's red suit.
Yep.
Red shiny suit.
That discussion will be in After the Pies,
yeah,
which we'll put up later in the week. How do you fix it? How do you think? For, by the way, for what it's worth, this is how we voted at Men in Blazers. Yeah, we've all voted for Blondor. Number three, Megan Rapinoe.
Yeah.
Number two, KB5, Carl Beckerman.
Yeah.
All the way. And by the way, FIFA, I know you listen. We are not coming to the Blondor ceremony until Carl Beckerman cracks at 11. It's enough. It's enough of your crap, your fixing, your... You diminish football by ignoring the truth. And number one, of course, Stephen Naismith.
Yeah. But you can't win the Ballon d'Or if you can't be seen to actually receive it.
Yep.
Nobody translucent has ever won the Ballon d'Or. They wouldn't know if they handed it to him. They wouldn't know it was in his hands. And it's far too precious awards.
That's just racist.
He's see-through. It's just practical.
People who are really...
It's practicality.
People who are they say there's like white people are dominant, but people who are really, really white...
People who are see-through.
They have it hard. Yeah. They are margin. They're on society's margin. We're bringing them back from the periphery. But, Dave, how would you fix it? You're Mr. TV. You're Mike TV. I think of you as Mike TV from Willy Wonka.
Well, the accountants at Price Waterhouse, you think they can't be bought with their little briefcase, which has the collated votes.
How do you fix the Ballon d'Or? Because I've given it a lot of thought.
Well, you do what FIFA's probably been doing for the last 50 years. I really believe that most of this stuff is fixed. Well, but does it really matter?
Are you arguing with yourself? Am I meant to
join
in with this conversation?
I don't know. I'm really thinking about it. I'm wondering, because I think it's got to matter to go and fix it.
Yeah. Here's how you fix it.
Yeah.
Hard-hitting journalism.
Yeah.
Step one, Davo. FIFA, listen to me.
Yeah.
Tina and Amy are not doing the Golden Globes anymore.
They're going to do the Ballon d'Or.
Get in hard.
Yeah.
Get your people with their people. Frankly, from the little we know of Tina and Amy, Davo, we know one thing.
Mm-hmm.
They like the same thing as FIFA do. Money.
Really, they love it in the face.
They love it. Get your people with their people. Yeah. Get them hosting.
Yeah.
I would love.
Yeah.
Amy is an amazingly talented human being.
My lawyer also represents Tina Fey.
I would love to see Amy Poehler's Sepp Blatter impersonation from the stage of the Ballon d'Or.
You haven't seen it.
It goes like this.
It puts the pills in the people. Yeah, we'd love to see that. It would be good.
That's the Sepp Blatter impersonation.
Yeah.
That leaves one question.
Yeah.
Who should host the Golden Globes?
Well, it won't be Ricky again.
Oh, I love Ricky.
I tell you, wouldn't mind seeing Tony Pulis rock up.
Pulis?
Yeah, Pulis would be pretty nice. TP.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him rock up and host the Golden Globes. That'd be amusing.
Solo.
Yeah. Barry Hearn, he'd do a good job.
I've got to say, Pulis' opening monologue would be to die for.
Barry Hearn, he'd be good.
Give it a common touch.
Yeah.
Here's who's going to do it.
Okay.
This is how it's going to go down.
Yeah.
It's only one answer.
You're taking control of so many things.
There's
right
only
now,
one
Rod.
Answer.
I've never seen you so assertive.
The Illuminati.
Have you been listening to those tapes again?
People think, it's because I wore the tan and the hair. I feel so much
more
assertive.
It's a completely different Rod.
You, seriously.
You're doing a lot of pointing. Rod is doing a lot of pointing right now. I just want to make that true.
When I had hair, I felt so much more confident. Here's who's going to host.
Okay, don't point at me anymore.
It's going to be Rebecca Lowe and Carl Martino.
Rebecca Lowe?
Yeah. Who else could it be?
Tino?
With the two Robbies
working
the red carpet.
Yeah.
Rancic needs a year off. She looks like she needs a year off.
What's Arlo going to do? The human, not the dog.
Arlo's going to do the voiceovers when they walk onto stage to get the...
Lionel Messi
this is
won
her second
the Ballon d'Or.
Exactly. This is her fifth nomination and
good
second
one.
Golden Globe. And then as the night goes on, he'll just kind of like be like... She's had 12 gin and tonics and her meaty French... Oh, it'd be amazing.
Olivia Giroud's meaty French forehead.
Yeah, who's the guy who runs the foreign... The guy who sounds like Louis van Gaal but looks like...
I don't know his name.
Yeah, he'll be amazing commentary on that. His tiny, weeny little Dutch forehead.
Yeah.
Be amazing. All right, so we've got that sorted. Now we fix the world, David.
Yeah.
When are we getting to the football?
Yeah, we've got a packed show, Rog. We're going to break down a Premier League weekend in which one title contender rebounded... Well, the other blinked, Rog. We're going to delve into the Dutch manager derby that pitted third versus fourth. And we're going to bring you an update on the biggest row over Anglo-American allegiance since the Stamp Act of 1765. Amazing that we're saying that the revolution itself was not as big as the Stamp Act of 1765. Of course, the Frank Lampard situation between Man City and NYCFC. Also, your chance to write a song and win a custom Men in Blazers Stars and Stripes Xbox from the GFOPs at EA Sports FIFA. And we welcome to the pod WWE Intercontinental Champ and Preston North End fan, Bad News Barrett.
Oh, I need a nickname like that, David.
Okay,
I'm
Rog,
prepared to talk about the Stamp Act of 1775, David.
65, I
that
believe.
That should be on our other pod.
Yeah.
Today in Things That America Got Right.
Pre-revolutionary American history. Yeah. Yeah, we could do
it's
that,
my favorite
Rog.
Favourite kind of history.
Okay, to the football. Time to crack open the Guinness, Rog.
Breakfast of champions, David.
Breakfast of champions. Not in the face. Skull.
Breaking bald.
Very good. Okay, Rog, we are 21-38 through the Premier League season. That does not reduce, Rog.
I love it when you point so hard in my face.
Well, I've got to point now. I've got to meet your point more with a counterpoint.
You can't counterpoint.
I can counterpoint. If there's one thing I can do, it's counterpoint, Rog. 21-38 is the way through the season. Premier League returns after an FA Cup weekend during which teams rested key players, Rog, many of whom then returned looking as exhausted as ever. We start right at Manchester United, Rog. The big game of the weekend, Manchester United versus Southampton, third versus fourth. The Saints
Dutch
march
Dutch
into Manchester and take all 3 points at Old Trafford for the first time in 27 years, Rog.
Oh, I had my own teeth back then. Man, that was so long ago.
After a turgid first half, Southampton substitute Dusan Tadic side-footed home in the 69th minute to give Ronald Koeman's side a lead they would not relinquish. Southampton leapfrog United into third, 10 points behind league leaders Chelsea.
Oh, Southampton, David.
Yeah.
The romance.
Yeah, it is romance.
The hope. Yeah. The belief.
Yeah.
Of a better world.
Yeah.
That's what they represent, David.
Yeah. Do you think they got a little fortunate in this game, Rog? That was certainly Louis van Gaal's post-match presser seemed to say that, like, you know what, they played better against us down in Southampton than they did at Manchester United.
Yeah, but, you know, if you don't get any shots on goal for an entire 90 minutes...
Hard to score.
Hard to make that case with a straight face. Look, I mean, the game opened with Southampton brightly pressing like hungry Airedale Terriers.
Yeah.
Clear that pressure couldn't be sustained, and United began to have their way down the flanks. They pinned Southampton back without ever really cutting them open. It was all flair, nice touches, but no shots on goal. And it was very ugly on the eye, Davo, to be honest. But that was part planned by Southampton in this game because it was a more pragmatic Southampton than we'd seen earlier in the season. It was they weren't trying to do their kind of the positive, assertive, idea-driven football. Like, their goal was to soak up United's pressure. They wanted to seed the flanks. They gave it to Luke Shaw.
Yeah.
They gave it to Antonio Valencia. He had swaths of space. And their whole game plan seemed to revolve around Morgan Schneiderlin, who kind of led that tenacious shielding trio, Victor Wanyama, Stephen Davis alongside him, with your favourite, James Ward-Prowse, hoping to catch them on the counter.
Had another good game, and he did, by the way. I mean, look, 15 goals conceded in the Premier League this season, the best defensive record. And it's not just defence. They play very good individual defence. It's their team defence, which is so effective, Rog. And they do still pass it out of the back. You know, and Fraser Forster, I think, has been a great addition for them as well. Schneiderlin, you already mentioned. They're just organised. They are constantly organised. And they work so hard on both sides of the ball. I really enjoy watching this team play football.
Their fans
even
love it.
When they don't really... You know, gel. They didn't. They just wasn't a great performance by them. But they still. It's energizing to watch them play.
There's few happier sets of fans right now than Southampton fans. They are absolutely delirious. They spent the majority of this game bellowing, "What a waste of money!" at Luke Shaw, who only managed to wobble through 63 minutes of the game, the exact minute that the game changer entered the field. Dave, Dusan Tadic.
Yeah, no tattoos, Rog. Refreshing to see. A man with no tattoos in the Premier League.
He has no tattoos and he didn't start, Dave. He'd been benched for new loanee Aljaro Elia, whose pace was preferred. Beautiful, beautiful name on Elia. Do you know why he's called Aljaro? His first name.
After Aljaro?
Yeah.
No.
Really? His first name is spelled E-L-G-I-E-R-O. You should probably tell our younger listeners who Al Jarreau is.
Al Jarreau, is it like a sort of a soul, R&B, jazz sort of a singer,
he's
right?
He's a 70s soul-singing crooner.
Yeah.
The voice best known, I guess, behind the Moonlighting theme.
Really?
Someone
I didn't know that
by
was him.
Day, someone by day. So he sang
Al
that.
Al Jarreau.
And Al Jarreau's mother and sister loved Al Jarreau, but they couldn't be bothered working out how you spelt it. They didn't know how to spell it correctly, so they just spelt it Al Jarreau, E-L-I-J-E-R-O.
Could we do an entire World Football 11 based on people named after singers? Because you've got Lionel Messi already.
Yeah.
Got to try and think of some more who are named after singers.
When I read that, I realised I should have called one of my kids Billy Ocean. I may have another kid just so I could call my kid Billy
Caribbean
Ocean.
Queen.
I'd spell it B-I-L-I-O-S-H-U-N. Billy Ocean Bennett. Oh, it'd be amazing.
That'd be so good.
Dave, what a finish, though. Let's talk about that finish.
I might have another one called Johnny Guitar Watson Davis. That would be good. I love Johnny Guitar. Love me some Johnny Guitar Watson.
That kid had grew up to be a wild man.
Come here, Guitar.
What a finish.
Yeah.
What a finish, Dave.
Well, it was a great finish.
Would you call that finish pert?
Yeah,
it was pert as his nipples?
It was a one. Look, it was the weekend of side foot finishes this weekend. But it was a great finish. But it had two things before it that I really liked. A James Ward-Prowse run. James Ward-Prowse sucks in. I mean, this is a player that simply, other than me, who speaks about him nonstop, just does not get spoken about in the Premier League very often.
By the way, I tweeted at the weekend when I watched Chuck Pagano, who I love. Every time someone scores a goal, I just love shouting, Chuck Pagano!
Yeah.
I tweeted, we do not have people in England called Chuck Pagano. They don't just exist. I got battered with people just tweeting this back, going like, no, you have people called James Ward-Prowse that we don't have in America.
Yeah, his name just doesn't really inspire the masses.
James Ward-Prowse?
James Ward-Prowse, but he did terribly well, the young fella, to go and make that goal. And then, post was so well mic'd. I mean, they are really, NBC are doing an amazing job
miking those posts.
I think there might be mics, like the mics you put inside Stephen Gerrard's mind on this week's Men in Blazers show. I think that the mics are inside the wood.
I've honestly heard planes take off that are quieter than that ball rebounding off the post from Pelé's shot.
Yeah.
Tadic, what did he do?
Side-footed it in, Rog.
Yeah, a finish that was instinctual. It actually looks, I think, a lot easier than it was.
Well, especially when Tyler Blackett dodges the ball on the line. That made it way
easier.
He's very
good at that.
He's amazing. He moved backwards and away. Backwards and away, backwards and away.
What followed, Davo,
was
not instinctual.
Yeah.
He became the Serbian Brandi Chastain.
Yeah. Although it's a pretty good shirt removal, as shirt removals go. I mean, it wasn't Alexis Sanchez earlier in the season standard, but it was a pretty good shirt removal.
I love the way he adjusted his underpants right before flexing.
Well, he wanted to show the entire eight-pack and both canals going down the side of the eight-pack, and you can't really get the full glory of that unless you sort of hike the shorts down a little lower.
I was shocked he only had two canals. I have five.
Really?
Yeah.
Where are the
Some
other three?
Some of them are flooding.
Where are the first two?
At Rex Dettinger tweeted us and told us after the game, Tadic was asked about taking off his shirt.
Yeah.
This, if you didn't see it, he took off his shirt and as he was running, hiked his shorts down a little bit, pulled his underpants up, made sure that he didn't want to show his five pack. He wanted all six. You thought there were eight.
Yeah. I think he had an eight pack.
Rex Dettinger said, the quote from Tadic when he was asked about the shirt, he said, I never think about things like this.
Yeah.
He said about it with a straight face.
Yeah, it was good. It was an honest celebration, Rog. He was yellow carded for his trouble.
But it was worth it.
It was worth it. He maybe should have been red carded, I feel, for making all men look bad. but it was good.
Well,
it was good.
And the only question now is what month will that be in Southampton's calendar next season? But United responded by throwing on 73% of the Premier League's elite attacking players.
As you said earlier, didn't muster a shot on goal. Poor Juan Mata, Rog.
He kept
three
daring
terrible
to Wando.
Misses in 6 minutes.
Kept daring to Wando with a few chances they made. By the way, Fellaini was thrown on, and in the post-match, I love it, Louis van Gaal insists on referring to him as Fellaini.
Fellaini.
As if it's for F-E-F-A-L-E-R-N-I.
They don't respect Belgians.
Fellaini. Fellaini is how he says it. Fellaini.
Yeah, see, in Holland, the Belgians, they make jokes about Belgians, how stupid they are. It's like some English people make jokes about Irish people. They're not that bright. And in Holland, the Belgians are the butts of all of their jokes.
The
He's probably doing it just to
The Flemish or the Walloons?
I think all of them.
Oh, that's harsh.
Yeah.
There's a couple of bright ones. Plastic Bertrand was a fairly bright fellow. Watching Mata get a little bit angry and kicking the advertising.
I didn't like it.
I'm only used to seeing him smiling, chirpy
I know,
little
I didn't like it.
It was like seeing lightning emerge from the sun, David. Okay, it was still cute, though. He's, yeah. he's like a frustrated polar bear cub unable to work out how to spear a seal at an ice hole when he gets angry. Not a single shot on target. How do you do that, David? How do you do that?
I don't know. I don't really know how you do that. And Juan Mata, who was, I mean, an amazing goal scorer when he was at Chelsea and just didn't get a lot of chances and converted. Had a very high conversion rate as well, Rog. Just shocked that he didn't put it on target the whole time.
United now have the Radamel Falcao situation to deal with. He's fully fit. He didn't even make the match day squad. James Wilson, 19-year-old, was preferred to him on the bench. That is a open wound.
What do you think that is?
Which is flapping away. They are paying, reportedly, £3 million a month for him in terms of loan fees and salary. It is a dark decision. But United right now are a team that almost every problem they are trying to solve by flinging money at it. So it's a problem caused by money, and money will make it go away. Talking about money, Southampton held on. First win against United at Old Trafford since January 1988. What song was number one then, David?
Wow, January 1988. Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark.
Oh, close.
Did I get it?
No. But like, you just made me happy.
Yeah.
God, I love a world in which Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark.
Ever had a number one song?
God, Got My Mind Set on You by George Harrison.
Got My Mind Set on You.
It's going to take money, a whole lot of spending money. It's going to take plenty of money to do it right. That's what Van Gaal's message to his board is right now. And those lyrics, they actually, they're pretty fitting for Southampton and their narrative-defying run. Because for me, they are the most thrilling story of the season. I mean, football is traditionally dominated on the field by money and commercial matters that all occur off it. And Southampton's narrative, David, let's remind ourselves, it was meant to be because they had a relatively easy start to the season. Everyone, common wisdom said, once they started to play the top six, they were meant to fall like a heavy pebble. But they've taken those blows on the nose. They've stepped right back up. Can they keep it going, David? Because right now, they are higher in the table than any of the clubs, United, Liverpool, Arsenal, who prized away their talent in the summer, and Spurs, who, of course, stole their podgy coach.
Well, look, I said earlier in the season that what encourages me about Southampton, why I think they're different than teams that have some smaller clubs who found themselves in this position in prior seasons, is that their success is actually built on their defensive record. It's not built on offense. 15 goals conceded. I don't think this is fortunate. Yes, Man United didn't muster a shot on goal, but they are so organized. They make it difficult for you to go and score. They've got a very good young goalkeeper with a, I would say, a fairly old head on his shoulders as well. Fantastic back four. They've got depth. He's rotated that squad really effectively. And if they continue to like not concede goals, less than one a game, Rog, they're going to be right there. You know, I think they proved over two games against Man United this season that they're better than Man United. We said Man United were going to come good when they spent the money in, you know, and got all these players gelled. Everybody's waiting for Man United to do it. I don't think Man United are going to get a lot better. I think Arsenal are going to continue to get better throughout the season. But that's three clubs along with Chelsea and Man City. I could see Southampton getting into fourth very, very easily.
Well, I asked Ronald Koeman when I was there. This was last month.
I think
now.
West Ham are their biggest threat.
Will they make the top four?
Yeah.
And he was very clear. No, we can't make it. We are honestly looking to do better than we did last season. And the Europa League is our focus. He's now changed, at least publicly, his tune. He was asked if they can make the top four. He said, why not? We have the qualities, we have the players. At the moment, we have to believe that if we don't have really bad injuries or to some key players, then why not? For me, the key is holding on to Schneiderlin.
Yeah.
Such a tactically astute anchor for this team. Tottenham, Arsenal, and now United this week, among those rumoured to be wooing him.
Well, Schneiderlin wanted out last season. They held on to him, Rog.
We will see. Is the glass half full or half empty for Lewis Van Gaal, Davo? First defeat in 11 games, you could say, if you were being Michael Positive Davis. But he's now in a much banded around stat, collected the same number of points through 21 Premier League fixtures as David Moyes last season.
I think he sees his team playing better than anybody else. I still think his best player by far this season. I actually wonder
Fellaini.
Where... Well, no, I think...
Fellaini,
you know,
I just like saying that.
Not popular... But I don't know where Man United would be without Wayne Rooney. He looks a class above any other United player on the park week after week after week. He just wants it really badly. And De Gea has been amazing as well, obviously, all season.
I found the Van Gaal narrative fascinating. I mean, it was burnished by his tactical brilliance at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Which was most really the cruel substitution for the penalties. But it gave us the hope that he'd take time to get a squad. But once he understood his strategy, that progress would then be swift. But in this game, he was tactically outmatched by his Dutch nemesis, Koeman. That icy handshake at the end, David. I've watched that over and over and over again. It was psychologically chilling. But this team still seemed very much like a mediocre work in progress. Really, the ultimate symbol of this crap season of crap football, I guess, is that they're still fourth. He's invited into the Manchester United camp. Zen Master, Grandmaster Sken, Salford's number one practicing Zen Master. I looked him on his website. It says, true strength lies in gentleness and mastery of the world, which begins of a mastery of self. Van Gaal says he needs him to physically and mentally prepare this team and take them to the next level. I just love the notion of Phil Jones and Chris Smalling meeting with this guy and him saying things like, no matter how many years you sit doing Zazen, you'll never become anything special, says Kodo Sawaki Roshi.
Yeah.
Or life is stepping onto a boat which is about to sail out to sea and sink.
Yeah, I also... we'll see how that works for Van Gaal with some of those Man United players.
That was Shunyu Suzuki, obviously.
Yeah. But the... I think that nothing prepares you to come to the Premier League to be a manager of a big club. I think it's almost easier to come in and go to Southampton and know that every week you're going to try and be giant killing, that you're going to be in there with a scrap. I think to come to Man United, the expectations, and every team that goes into Old Trafford, any time that Man United go and visit your ground, wherever you are in England or Wales, everyone just is set up. They just want your scalp so badly. And it comes at you week after week after week after week. It's hard. It's hard.
Just the pressure of wearing that enormous blazer
logo.
Crest.
Yeah, the crest is too big on a man.
I'm telling you, I think that must... Do you, if you've ever worn a backpack just on one shoulder, you often get very small, very so in your lats, down in your lats. I'm always worried about
it. It's a lack of balance, Roger. You can pull a groin or a hip flexor
just off that enormous Louis Van Gaal blazer patch.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely Rog. Before we get to our next game, Everton, Man City, Rog. Big news from City's American cousin, NYCFC.
The
Trenton Thunder of the parent sub-brand of the parent company. Frank Lampard is now officially, Rog, signed with the club and will, double point, join the team in July.
Oh, he loves us. He loves us not. He loves us
he
again,
loves us.
Nemo.
He's been told to put pen to paper because this is the way they clean
it. What is the flower that you do? You pull out the flower, the petals. See, we in America, don't we? In England, don't we blow a flower? Isn't there like a dandelion or something that we blow?
I don't think it's a dandelion. It's the one that's all furry.
Yeah, it looks like Fulani.
It looks like Fulani.
We blow it. In America, you use a dandelion. That's what I imagine Frank Lampard just plucking off. I love you.
Yeah.
I love you not.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that you finally spoke. I want to make it completely clear about my situation. I've read a lot of lies and nonsense over the last few days. And then he started to talk about the complexities of contract commitments, all this kind of stuff. Essentially, it boils down to Frank Lampard hates contracts, now hates Chelsea, and I think hates America a little bit, but he's working through it. And he'll be with us. But the honest truth is, there's been a lot of foaming over here. But the truth is, Frank Lampard fell into this by summoning an elite level of form that no one thought he had left in him, which has made the situation far more complex than everyone imagined. Probably fueled a little bit by City's finances being in slightly dodgy and illegal state with UEFA looking into them. They're subsidiary companies which have had money splapping all over the way. But the big takeaway for me, Davo, is that this whole thing is the end of American innocence in the face of world football, which is a venal, dirty, double-talking, backstabbing place.
Yeah, it's what we love about it. It's really what we love about it. I think that is true, is that I don't believe that the intention was ever for Frank Lampard to go and spend a full season at Man City and not come to MLS until July. I think what happened is he started playing very good football. However, I would say that a player as smart as, and believe me, it's hard for me to criticise Frank Lampard, but a player as smart as Frank Lampard, a player who has been made, on the whole, since he was a young player. Now he's been, as he sort of reached his sort of mid to late 20s and on, has made very, very good decisions in terms of what he's got involved in, what he's not got involved in contractually and in his off-the-field contracts and business dealings. I think that he can't completely blame this on his advisors. They obviously advised him very badly, and he allowed himself to be manipulated by the situation and not be out there in front of the story. But I think he had to have realized early on that when this was going down, that he had to get ahead of the situation. And I think he ended up being a passenger in this situation, and I think he'll end up feeling pretty bitter about it.
Well, Jason Kreis, the manager of NYCFC, said the Lampard decision was made by our parent company.
Yeah.
And it was a decision that was made for the best of the entire group. Parent company, Dave. I've got to say, once more, it's hard to cheer for NYCFC.
Come on, you parent company.
Unless you're a City fan.
Come on, you Trent and Thunder.
They are a brand. It's quite pretty clear through this. They're a brand extension of Manchester City. But at the same time, it's not like the moment in V when we realised the nice people from outer space actually had lizard tongues and were out to kill us. It was pretty apparent from the beginning, wasn't it? But you might want to abandon your idea of the half Chelsea, half NYCFC jersey.
Because I'll be killed when I go to the games.
Parent company. Parent company. By the way, City versus LA Galaxy. Put this in your diary. August 23rd, Lampard against Steven Gerrard. It's going to be a slice of magic.
I think the one thing I'd say is sometimes what I find, and we've talked about this before, the use of the word franchise, talking about MLS teams.
Oh, when you say that word like that, it makes me want to have some White Castle.
It's sometimes. I'd love a White Castle franchise. Can we do that, Rob? Can we have a White Castle franchise?
I'd love one.
Is that sometimes I feel that MLS clubs are extensions of just MLS, and that they are just the parent company is MLS, and we're just looking at the Toronto franchise, and we're looking at now the Miami franchise and the Orlando franchise, and extensions of MLS, and now we've got within MLS a franchise of another brand, which is Manchester City and their global football brand that all seem to play in sky blue. And I think it's going to be interesting to see the conflicts between those two parent companies as we go forward. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Oh, it'd be like my two dads.
Yeah.
And not getting on very well. Another player who's going to make that August 23rd even more of a must-see, Davey.
Yeah.
Mix Discaroo. Nordic Messi.
Yes, that hair. Coming to NYCFC. Oh, the humidity in the summer, Rog. Well, on Mix's hair.
Signed yesterday for NYCFC.
Yeah.
I'd say it's a masterstroke.
Well, it's a very good player to have while you're waiting for Frank Lampard.
Frank Lampard, who, is all I can say. Mix is a man flowing of hair, occasion of the moustache. He's full on McDreamy.
Yeah.
And he's instantly going to connect lovers of Harlequin romance novels to this new team.
Yeah. That's a big audience.
At Doug Mack ESPN, the great Doug McIntyre, tweeted, Discaroo has long had love affair with New York City, the city, not the team. He visits annually. Collects Yankees hats. God, Lids is going to love him arriving.
Oh, the Lids are going to love
him. He has 74 New York Yankees caps as of last May.
Wow.
Do you have a collection that we've never discussed?
I like those miniature chairs that Vitra make. I've got quite a lot of those. What else do I have? Quite a lot of cameras. Got a lot of old cameras, Rog. Love the old Nikons, the early ones. Don't take many photos with them, but I like them. I don't know. Don't have many collections. My dad is a collector of everything, so I can't possibly collect as well as my father.
Oh, Dejan Lovren tweeted a photo of his Kinder Egg collection today.
Really? That's nice.
I collect ping pong ephemera.
You do?
From around the world.
Well, you collect a lot of things. You've got an amazing collection of old football, Premier League stuff, every song ever recorded about football.
I'd have a massive collection of football vinyl. One day I'll do a book, David. I think you can explain the whole of football
through the songs. Yeah, you're a collector.
Should we talk about the Everton 1, Parent Company 1?
Yeah, Everton 1, Parent Company 1. Never rooted harder for Everton in my life, Rog. City lose ground to the league leaders, Chelsea at Goodison. The Citizens drew first blood in the 74th minute when Fernandinho nodded home a deflected Nate Silver effort. But just 4 minutes later, Stephen Naismith glanced a Leighton Baines free kick past Herr Joe Hart to earn Everton their first point in 5 games.
Oh, I dreaded this game, David.
Yeah.
I can't stand blue on blue violence.
Oh.
We had a tweet from a GFOP at Matt Maker's Colours.
Yeah.
Who tweeted what he thinks is my mental state. I think he's diagnosed me.
Uh-huh.
He says that I have cherophobia.
Yeah.
It's the fear of being too happy in case something tragic happens.
Well, it's a little bit of that. You definitely prepare yourselves for the, prepare yourself for the worst at all points.
I've been pretty right so far in 2015, but I have to say, before this game, I felt like Samwell Tarly at the wall on the eve of imminent Wilding invasion. It was a massive game for Everton, massive game for Roberto Martinez, for whom the shine on his immaculate brown brogues has become a little bit sullied this season. Reminds me a little bit of the problem facing Brendan Rodgers after his first season at Liverpool, where he just emphasised possession, obsession with possession, and they'd lose games and he'd tell the press, we lost, but I mean, we won the possession stat. He wouldn't speak like that. He'd speak in his own kind of Kenny Powers's, Irish Kenny Powers's kind of way. But the question for Martinez is, would he keep with his passing philosophy, passing, 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 or would he drown by it? And everyone was seeing whether Everton would go a little bit more direct, and they did. Started optimistically. It was a battle between two teams, one full of endeavour and desperate intention, the other with brains, creativity, and Jesus Navas's beautiful irises.
Yeah.
And City were very arsenally. They passed the ball around at will, and the madcap striking antics of Stefan Jovetic kept Everton in the game. No Touré, he's off to the African Nations Cup. And with Kun Aguero on the bench, Davo, City seemed like a very different team. Maybe it's why they've signed, well, definitely it's why they've signed Wilfred Bonny for $42.5 million.
Yeah, they need, amazing to say it with the number of players in that squad, but they need more attacking options. I thought Everton were very unlucky to go behind, Rog. It was quite Arsenal-y. They were in the middle of an attack. A very good tackle, we should say, by Zabaleta.
Slash handball.
Well, he certainly handled the ball, maybe twice on the ground, Rog. Ball breaks upfield. And, you know, caroning all around, Rog, the ball until it ends up getting to Fernandinho, who nods it in.
And then Everton displayed something they've not done in 3 months, which is resilience, calm, belief. And
bounce
they responded.
Ability,
to, oh, Stevie Blondor Naismith. I just wrote in my little game notebook, God, happiness, emotions. I love Everton Football Club through to my core. And I can tell you, Davo, 1-1, a draw that felt like a win. I slept better. I love more. I was more present than I have been after any win this season after that 1-1 tie. It was a tiny, tiny platform that made me start to believe again, all until that was snuffed out cruelly by West Ham in the FA Cup, damn you penalties, 9-8. Yeah.
Well, I would say, I've observed this about you before, Rog, you prefer draws to wins. You are always happier after a draw than after a win, because a win builds you up to a point of expectation where your hope is built up, which makes it very difficult for you then to deny that it's going to be very good. You prefer a draw. You would be happy at the end of a 38-game season.
38 points.
38 points.
It's a perfect result.
Season.
Oh, it's so
perfect
interesting.
Season.
I can tell you, Everton crashed out the FA Cup in cruel fashion. 10 men, and they kind of dragged themselves back in. They're facing West Ham and a referee who was terrible. I missed the beginning of the game because we were interviewing Bad News Barrett. And once Everton went ahead, I didn't dare put it on television, Dave, in case I changed Everton's luck.
Yeah.
So I ended up listening to the game old school style on the phone to my mate Jamie in London, who held his cell phone up against the radio. To no avail. Penalty shootout included some goalkeeper on goalkeeper action. I love that. Spanish goalkeeper on Spanish goalkeeper, actually. And Everton's goalie, Joe Robles, who'd been so dashing through the game, was the first to blink. Adrian, his opposite number, finished with aplomb, shedding his goalie gloves with flourish. And I'd say Tim Howard would have scored his penalty.
Yeah.
Joe Robles didn't. And then I just sobbed long into the night, Davey. The mental picture of that loss for me was even worse than seeing Justin Bieber in an Everton jersey.
Yeah, that was tough for you to take.
Yeah. So parent company. By the way, it's parent company Vincent Company's brother.
Yeah,
are they not related?
Be. It could be. Could be. It was a good name. Vincent's brother parent. Talking of parent company, Rog, Chelsea 2, Newcastle 0. Chelsea reclaimed their place atop the table after a performance that was pragmatic, if not pretty. After sleepwalking through much of the first half, a quick corner, or quick thinking corner from Willian, and a side-footed, we can have side-foot finishes, Oscar finish, put the Blues up just before halftime. In the 59th minute, Diego Costa capped off a silky piece of combination play to seal the win. Two significant things in this match, Rog. Starting lineup, Courtois replaced by Peter Cech, and Kurt Zouma, as we prognosticated last week, comes in and makes his full Premier League debut at centre-back and has a pretty impressive game, Rog.
Yeah, he's just 20.
Yeah,
young I thought he was powerful, impressive, and he needed to be because this was another week, another test of pace. And to begin with, I mean, Newcastle were very assertive and Chelsea had to face some pretty sprightly football from Remy Cabella, who whisked past Terry and Azpilicueta at will. I mean, the old basketball phrase that you break a defender's ankle.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally twisted...
broke his groin. He took his groin out.
When he went past Azpilicueta, I mean, it was like watching Allen Iverson when he was back in the days when he was wearing Reebok Answers.
Yeah.
Newcastle fans are trying to formalise the crowded house Cabella chant. Everywhere you go, always bring Cabella with you. You look gorgeous, absolutely remarkable.
Amazing save by Cech to deny him, Roger, in that first half.
And then Chelsea, who'd look sluggish, but 2 minutes before half-time, sneaky, smart, cunning and alert. As I said on the show, it's the kind of thing Bill Belichick, the quick corner, he drew up if he was a Premier League coach, David. I don't know why we don't see it more, the quick corner.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was like a rehearsed set play. Willian goes off there, thinks very quickly. Branislav Ivanovic, his large bottom, still doesn't prevent him from cutting inside, losing his defender. Colaccini is literally just like, what's going on in the
Tim Krull in goal is like literally doing water bottle and looking down his feet and doing what goalkeepers do as the ball's kicked back into play.
Yeah, I mean, and from the right back, then Oscar side foots it in, Rod.
And the second goal, an outburst of kaleidoscopic psychedelia from Hazard and Oscar, set up Diego Costa.
It was an amazing move. That was a beautiful goal, Rod.
Yeah,
it was,
and a cool, composed, clinical finish for what
range.
Diego Costa was
from
way,
the halfway line.
way downtown. Yeah. Rich Award, he'd worked so hard, Diego Costa, that whole game, David.
Well, he'd been changing his outfits a lot, Rod.
Yeah, more than Elton John in concert.
Started off short sleeve shirt, gloves, changed, took the gloves off, just a short sleeve shirt, comes on the second half, long sleeves and the gloves. Pretty good combination. That was the right combination for him, Rog, and hence the goal.
Can we talk about Mourinho for 1 second? At halftime, him and John Carver, the Newcastle temporary manager, getting into a little argument, and Mourinho did what he did to Pochettino last week, the old neck grapple, the old I'm chatting to you, but putting the power move on with a neck grab, which is really annoying when you're angry, and then you can only counter it with a counter neck grab, but they've already got height on you and leverage. I mean, you look at these Mourinho fights. I think we should, on our show, we should do a reel of the ninjutsu of Jose Mourinho.
Oh, the old the finger poke when he was in Spain.
And the Wenger thing. I mean, the more I look into it, the more I bet you he's read the work of Hattori Hanzo, the 16th century ninja samurai who was reputed to have developed the ability to disappear and reappear at will, predict the future, and move objects with his mind in the same way Mourinho can move Gary Cahill around the field.
Yeah, he's an amazingly competitive man, Rog. And let's face it, at the top of professional sport, say what you want about Mourinho, but you better be bloody competitive. Look at Ferguson. You better be bloody competitive if you want to go and live up there.
Do you think?
With the gods.
Or do you just need to know about posture and power handshake?
maybe. But maybe that's part of being competitive. He tries to seek and gain any advantage he possibly can.
I would like to get on
can.
The pod an expert in power handshakes to come and teach us all how to counter that kind of thing.
Didn't Barry Hearn do that?
I'll teach you. My hand's still, honestly, I can't feel. My second finger, I still can't feel anything in it from Barry Hearn's handshakes.
Arsenal 3, Stoke 0, Rog. Arsenal, they exact revenge, just the same way Chelsea did against Newcastle for last month's 3-2 loss at the Britannia against Stoke. Lauren Koscielny latched onto an Alexis Sanchez cross to give the Gunners a 1-0 lead just 6 minutes in. Sanchez followed the assist with two goals of his own, ensuring Arsenal move into fifth, just 1 point off the top four. Honestly, Rog, the game report, my match report for this game could just be Sanchez, 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 Sanchez. The MVP of the league without any doubt in my mind so far. The first Arsenal player in years. You always say that on a team you hate, there's always a player you love. I love watching Alexis Sanchez play football. He is magical, Rog.
That's big from you because the bookies have actually got as first choice for player of the year so far.
Yeah.
Cesc Fabregas.
No, it's not even in the same
league.
Yeah,
5-2 he is. And right now, Alexis at 3-1 second. Although the Daily Telegraph revealed that in the entire 23-season history of the Premier League, no new arrival in England has been directly involved in more Premier League goals than Alexis Sanchez. 20 games, more than Kun Aguero's 18 goals and assists, Ruud van Nistelrooy's 17, and Jurgen Klinsmann's 16. He's been involved in 19, 12 goals, seven assists.
Yeah,
remarkable.
Top five in both the assist and scoring table. Pretty remarkable stuff.
I'll say very quickly, I think his contribution is not just as an individual. It appears to be rubbing off on the whole team. In this game, Oxlade-Chamberlain, it's clear that he's picked up some of Alexis Sanchez's dance moves.
Yeah.
And he's turning into a much sharper player, much more intelligent in terms of his movement. And the net effect, Davo, is that this was less like watching a game of football and more like glimpsing Charles Atlas return to the beach to beat up the bullies who'd once kicked sand into their faces. From the off, Arsenal unfurled a high-octane football. It was just too much for Stoke to live with because it had things they just didn't understand, like ideas and creativity and style. Begovic kept them in the game initially, but then it was all Sanchez taking over. He set up Koscielny, who got his, what would you call it? It's not really a meaty French forehead.
It's the opposite of meaty.
It's more it's a bony, thin, slightly malnourished, bony French forehead.
Yeah, it's gamey. It's gamey, his forehead.
It's like eating quail.
Yeah, it is.
It's like gamey. Eating quail. It's like a lot of bones, but worth it because the meat's so succulent when you get in there.
Yeah. Just the speed of Alexis Sanchez's move there on the wing. It rebounded back off the corner. The speed of his move. He just, from a standing start, it was Hazard is the only player who has that kind of speed off a standing start in the Premier
Tony
League.
Hibbert.
And Hibbo, of course. He and Naismith, because you can't see him.
KB5.
But his ability, he's not in the Premier League yet.
Brad Evans.
But he, his ability off the standing start and just the pinpoint delivery of the ball. He's just so competitive, Alexis Sanchez. He just wants it.
You think that's what it is competitiveness?
Well, I tell you, he reminds me more of Suarez. Other than the biting, there's something about Sanchez that just reminds me of Suarez. He is just 90 minutes plus extra time. He is just a dynamo. He's just going, trying to win football games.
You know what I think? What? I think he's part man, part scissor-tailed dartfish.
Yes, true.
The way he accelerates into the box, you can see the Stoke defender's brain synapse in slow motion as he cuts him inside and out. And I do. I think it's the only conclusion I can get is that scissor-tailed dartfish.
Yeah.
It's logical, Davo. Arsene Wenger looked almost happy, or more accurately, not morose on the sideline.
Well, he should get some credit for signing Sanchez, Rog. You know, there's a Premier League every 4 years. You know, teams overpay for World Cup stars who then come into the Premier League and they disappoint. Sanchez is even better at Arsenal than he was during the World Cup, where he was excellent. So I think this was a great signing.
Yep.
Great signing.
Terrible signing. Is that Puma coach? What are you doing, Puma?
Yeah.
Putting him in that coat. It looks like he's wearing one of Jared Leto's custom-made condoms. It's enormous. Yeah. Totally, totally enormous. Media found a new way to troll Arsenal by pounding away on his issue of dropping Wojciech Szczęsny, who was rumoured to have been caught smoking in the locker room.
Smoking in the showers. Isn't that a song from the 1970s?
You boy, what are you doing? Yeah. 2-0 loss to Southampton. Of course you light up a cigarette after one of those. I did love the interview in the Polish newspaper, which I read. I'm not sure if you subscribe anymore. Just subscribe to Prez Lagadu Sportaweg.
No, I let it go. I read it. Read it. I've got the app.
His dad, who's 49, Davo. His dad is 49. Majek Szczęsny.
Yeah.
He said, you know, it really wasn't my son's fault. You've got to look at Per Mertesacker. He shows the agility of a rhinoceros. It's a bit harsh.
Yeah.
In German, if you're listening, Per Mertesacker, he's calling you Die Nashorn.
Yeah.
I only bring this up because I love the attack catalyzed headline of the year for me. There won't be a better headline in sport than this one in The Guardian. Wenger, I used to sell cigarettes.
Wow.
That was a sports story.
That's amazing.
The Guardian wrote, with much of his childhood spent in a village bar run by his parents in Alsace, Wenger's environment was clouded by a tobacco fog. Do your French accent for me for this line.
I grew up in a pub. You did not see from here the window because of the smoke, and I spent my youth selling cigarettes.
This is a news article. It makes Wenger's youth seem like a scene from Francois Truffaut's 400 Blows. Whole thing with Szczęsny's dad. Did your dad ever embarrass you as a kid, like Szczęsny's dad is embarrassing Szczęsny? Because by the way,
I went
and researched rhinoceroses. The rhino has surprising nimbleness and speed. It can turn with a startling quickness and agility. It can run at speeds up to 25 and 30 miles an hour. I'm sure Pumas like a wishes he was a rhinoceros.
Yeah, no, my dad never... I mean, the worst moment of my childhood, I would say, was when it was the father's versus son's cricket match at my primary school. And my father was on the dad's team. My father is a wet bob, not a dry bob.
Explain what that is.
Early at school, they decide whether you're a wet bob or dry bob. If you can run and you can play sports and you can hit a ball with a bat and you can play football, you're a dry bob.
You're a wet bob or a dry bob boy.
And if you can't run or do any of those things, you swim and sail and row. And my dad was a wet bob. Loved sailing, is his favourite sport. So anyway, my dad made the cricket team with the dads. And my dad came into bat when I was bowling. And I was fairly fierce at 10 years old. Right arm, medium fast.
Long run up.
Bowler. No, not a very long run up. But I could swing the ball. I could get a little bit of an off cut in. And my dad came up to bat. And very few Americans will understand it. But there's a way that you hold a bat if you've never played cricket before. That's an immediate tell. When you hold it a bit like a putter. And you sort of put the bat straight out and put it on the ground.
It's essentially like watching an AL pitcher bat in the World Series.
The second you see him stand there, I know that my dad is going to be absolutely useless. I'm not sure I've ever seen him play cricket. I didn't see a lot of my dad as a kid. But the second he came in, I knew it was going to be embarrassing. And I could see that he was embarrassed by the situation. And I ran up and made the decision that I was just going to bowl him out first ball and I was going to end the misery. And I took him out middle stump, literally came out of the ground and like catapulted across. And my dad's walked back to the pavilion, and it was just the worst moment of my childhood.
If you come at your dad, you best not miss.
Yeah, no, it's very, very true.
Our Liverpool College breaking crew days, didn't
it?
The crew.
Yeah.
People who've not heard the pod in a long time, I used to be around the Beastie Boys era, one of Liverpool's foremost break dancers.
Well, you were for years, Rog, for about 23, 24 years you were that.
The other guys in the band, Robbo.
Yeah.
And then Lobbo and Gobbo
were
the other two. They were both sons of...
And Rog!
Minor workers in the Nigerian consulate in Liverpool. They come around and pick me up so that we could practice our moves on the street corner of Liverpool on a Saturday night around Robbo's boombox.
Yeah.
They were fairly disreputable chaps. But when they rang the doorbell to pick me up on Saturday, my dad, no matter how quickly I got to the door, he'd always have got there before. I don't know how
amazing.
He did it.
Oh, he was on his bike, Rog.
And he'd always demand to be introduced to them.
Roger, are you going to introduce me?
Which one's Robbo and which one's Lobbo?
Which was so mortifying and formal. And the thing that was quite fascinating, my father was quite a menacing bloke, Dave.
Yeah.
And my mates, who the only thing they wanted to do was chug cider, try and steal Paul Mags from a local newsstand, and then bust some killer moves in Liverpool city centre. When my dad was there, in his presence, they'd all of a sudden morph into upstanding citizens. The Liverpool accents would disappear, and they'd become what they were for a minute, little middle-class boys, before kind of remorphing into wannabe Liverpool gangsters. But that feeling when, like, your child life and your father and your formality interacts, even talking about it now, it completed Justin Bieber in an Everton jersey all over again. Clean sheet for Arsenal, first in six games.
Yeah.
Mertesacker subduing Crouch. It was like watching George Morrison and Sean Bradley going at it.
Yeah, never quite kicked off, Rog, that fight.
Well, we may have to get an expert into the panic room to try and talk to us soon about how it would all go down.
Yeah, we're working on that right now, Rog. Okay, Sunderland 0, Liverpool 1. The Steven Gerrard farewell tour starts with a win. Serbian midfielder Lazar Markovic. He's come good, Rog. Poked the ball between Kostel Pantilimon's legs in the 8th minute to move Liverpool within 4 points of the top four, Rog.
What a game, Davey.
Yeah.
It's played with more trash on the pitch than when Chivas USA used to play. I mean, English football with its rich traditions. West Ham, they got the bubbles blowing.
Yeah.
Sunderland's tradition of windswept garbage. It's so romantic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like watching... I mean, I'm sure Wes Bentley was watching it and thinking, might be time to start making American Beauty too. Balotelli, after the game, stormed past the media and screamed, Sunderland is the effing coldest city I've ever effing played in. It's the first rational thing he said since he moved to Liverpool.
It's very true. Well, Barini got the start, so he can't have been that happy, Rog. Sunderland, Rog, did an amazing thing. I love watching this. Played better with 10 men against 11 than they did with 11 against 11.
I think if they'd gone down to 9, they might have won it.
Adam Johnson wouldn't have hit the crossbar. It would have gone in if they only had 9 men on the
field. Could have been 4 or 5-0. Yeah. I mean, picking a tepid performance of the season for Sunderland is a tough ask, but this was definitely probably in the top five.
Wow, and they lost 8-0 to Southampton, Rog.
Coutinho was a delight. He was like watching a winter sun on a frigid, grey-skied, icy day.
Yeah.
And then Markovic took all the plaudits. The more confident he becomes, the more kind of a live wire. He's Serbian Zuzi, David.
Yeah.
Could have been an extremely early penalty, but instead he went 5-hole for his first ever Premier League goal. His old Benfica coach, Jorge Jesus, said Markovic is a football rebel.
Yeah.
People have to show patience with players like him. This may have been the game where the patience is starting to pay off. Did you love that kung fu fighting volley he did. He hit the bar, crossbar of the season.
It was great. Great weekend for Serbians, Roger. Ivanovic with the assist, Tadic with the goal, Markovic with his first Premier League goal, Rog.
Big talking point, Raheem Sterling being given an extended break in Jamaica to recharge his batteries. That may be unconventional, slightly risky decision to grant him a mid-winter holiday. And since Steven Gerrard was the other talking point, the thunder strike, which hit the side netting, a lot of people thought it had gone in. I'm sure Brendan Rodgers was relieved that it didn't, Dave. And to make sure it didn't happen again, the once and future Los Angelian was subbed off at halftime for the first time since 2001.
Yeah.
After the game, Rodgers was all in on selling the notion of Jordan Henderson as Stevie Gerrard's successor.
Yeah.
When Steven isn't on the field, he's a real leader for us. There's no question he will become captain at the club. His quotes sound ever more like Adam Driver's and Girls to me, Brendan Rodgers. Taking the next step in a series of random steps, how strange our journey is through life, we try and inject it with meaning, but at the end, all we have are our days marching on. Who said that? Brendan Rodgers or Adam Driver? It doesn't really make any difference. Liverpool have lost just one of the last 9 Premier League fixtures. 1-5, drawn 3, lost 1. Possibly the least dazzling undefeated run of all time. Without Gerrard, Liverpool's best player, is probably an unconvincing win.
Yeah. Old friends, new places, Rog. We welcome some back this weekend. Crystal Palace 2, Tottenham 1. Alan Pardew returns to Selhurst Park. Thanks to faithful for a warm welcome to the ground where he played some very good football, Rog. They upset Spurs behind an 80th minute Jason Puncheon winner. It was another old friend who set up that goal, Rog. Wilfried Zaha, an amazing turn as a substitute in that game.
Yeah, I mean, Crystal Palace, they've given their manager a new first name. Most Newcastle fans thought his name was Sack Pardew.
I thought his name was Sack Pardew.
Yeah, Londoners are already, they're calling him Alan down there, though,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, amazing.
It was so Spursy to crush Chelsea 5-3 and then go and wilt against Palace, turning your fans thickening flaccid within 90 minutes. We proclaim this year the year of Spurs, 2015.
Yeah, it's not. It's just the year of Harry Kane, Rog.
That year lasted for exactly 9 days.
Yeah.
It's tough for Spurs. They can't play Chelsea every week.
Yeah.
So your boy did get his contractually obliged goal, Harry Kane.
Yeah, Harry Kane did. His Real Madrid audition tape, Rog.
Tacked on a couple of million euros to that bid. He scores them all from exactly the same point in the box. Just got to stop him getting to that special place on the kind of in the corner where he just rolls it home and it'll become powerless. Crystal Palace, I was impressed. The Pardew bounce, Dave. Puncheon, Gale and Zaha setting up goals for each other. Three players who were somewhat marginalised and seemed a bit kind of confused under the old regime. Our season starts now, read the banner held aloft by the Palace faithful after the game. They're already 15th place and they can dream. We had a question from GFOP. Robert Fiducia from Portland. I'm a big fan of MLS, but I want to know, what impact do you think DeAndre Yedlin will have on Spurs' backline? I think they'll let in even more goals.
No.
Score a lot more.
We'll see. I mean, look, they've got depth on the left side of midfield and at left back. He's going to have to get in and earn his place, but I think he's a good enough player. And he's got speed. He's got that unteachable quality. And they like players with speed up there in North London at Tottenham. West Brom 1, Hull City 0, Rod. The battle between two managers. They may very well be each other's fashion spirit animals, Rod. Tony Pulis bests Steve Bruce in his first league game in charge at West Brom thanks to a Berahino 78th-minute strike. It was an interesting goal, Rog, from the back pass, indirect free kick in the box. You don't often see that, but fantastically
like field
taken.
Hockey.
Fantastically, it is like field hockey, like a short corner. Fantastically taken.
West Brom, the Tony Pulis bounce. Where did that bounce come from? Possibly his sneakers, David.
Yeah, possibly his sneakers.
They're very run DMC.
Yeah,
One of our GFOPs, James Graham, said, Tony Pulis dresses like he's poised to drop the sickest mixtape ever.
I love that. Well done. Nice to see Tony Pulis, TP, back in the Premier League.
You love that Roger. He has TP on his tracksuit.
Not AP. It's not Anthony. It's Tony.
It's a class thing. It's a class thing.
It's so good. In the battle of cellar dwellers, Roger, Leicester prove they still have a pulse, beating Villa 1-0 at the King Power, courtesy of a 45th-minute Paul Konchesky volley from 18 yards out. I think that's his first Premier League goal ever.
In a long, long time. Leicester have rearmed, needing goals. They brought in Andrej Kramaric, 28 goals in 30 appearances for his old club. A record buy for Leicester, and he may jump right into the starting lineup this weekend.
Yeah, one of the ugliest tackles of the season, Rog, by Leicester's Matty James. Kieran Clark and Matty James almost had a Premier League non-almost fight. It was very nearly a an fight, Rog, which would have been a first this season. Burnley, Rog, they move out of the relegation zone. Dave Fishwick minibus sales and rentals going through the roof right now.
Yep.
After beating QPR 2-1 at Turf Moor, a tidy Danny Ings goal seals that win.
One of
them,
the best
Rog.
Taken goals you'll see in the relegation zone all season. Yeah. Burnley keep hold of Ings, and it's TBD in this transfer window.
Yeah.
We may be seeing a lot more of Mr. Dave Fishwick minibus sales. And I'd like to get Dave Fishwick on the pod.
Yeah, we'd love Dave Fishwick.
Can we get Dave Fishwick?
Let's book Dave Fishwick. We want to talk about the effect of minibus. We want to see how effective his advertising at Turf Moor has actually been this season. In his global business.
Audience,
his global audience. Yeah. How many minibus sales is he making in the Midwest and in the Northwest?
He's very big in the Dakotas.
Yeah.
At the end of the game, Richard Dunn of QPR was involved in an angry exchange of words with travelling QPR fans after the 10th consecutive away defeat for Harry Redknapp's team since the start of the season. It is getting testy at the bottom, Davey.
Yeah, this week's most poignant moment, Rog, came in Swansea's 1-1 draw with West Ham. The Hammers took the lead from an Andy Carroll 43rd minute wonder strike. I mean, that was the goal of the weekend.
Wonderful strike. It was like a turn, a shuffle, a fake, a Hulk smash.
Yeah, it was the way he made the goal, Rog, was just so phenomenal. He's moving. Andy Carroll is moving, Rog. He is moving limbs and girth.
Irvin Welsh, magical novelist, tweeted. He's a huge West Ham fan.
Yeah.
He just tweeted when that went in huge caps, he tweeted, "Goal of a shagger."
But in the 74th minute...
West Ham fans, by the way, can play that goal over and over and over the next time Andy Carroll's on the injury list for 7 months.
Yeah.
Goal of a shagger.
But in the 74th minute, Bafotimbi, Gomis's header, caromed off Mark Noble and into the net. Gomis then grabbed a French flag from the sidelines to pay tribute to the victims.
Beautiful moment,
Terror
David.
Attacks in Paris.
I wanted to join my country, even though I don't live there. It wasn't an easy week for all French people.
Yeah.
I wanted to thank Swansea for providing me with the armband and the French flag to show my support towards my country. Football can be beautiful.
Okay, Rog, on to our guest. An interesting one this week. Rog, you got to talk with a man who's well-versed in both leg drops and league football.
He's well hard. Our guest today comes from the grapple world of professional wrestling. He's a five-time WWE Intercontinental Champ who inflicts pain via his signature bad news bullhammer elbow. Everyone needs one of those. But in a twist of irony that only football can provide, the 6'7", 247-pound hard man supports a team nicknamed the Lilywhites. Of course, that's Preston North End. We welcome to the pod, live from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, England's own, Bad News Barrett Wade. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much, Roger. It's a pleasure to be on. I'm a big fan of the show.
Oh, you're a lovely man. We are a big fan of yours. I'm a big fan of wrestling in general. But let's go back to the beginning of the Bad News Barrett story. Preston, an old cotton town 32 miles northwest of Manchester. Americans know it as having the largest civilian cemetery in Europe. And the fact that it held the first KFC in UK, we're very proud of that feat. But can you describe the town to Americans who've never been there?
You know, the north of England suffered a pretty big decline over the last kind of 50 years, and most of the industry and the economy in the UK kind of went south towards London. So there's a saying in the UK, it's grim up north. Implying that the north of England is a little bit kind of stuck in the past sometimes. So I think that accurately describes a lot of the north of England. But Preston, the most important part of the town is the football team there, Keepdale, Preston North End FC. We won the first ever league and FA Cup in England back in 1888, 89. So, I mean, that's the really the key part of the town. And, you know, I'm very proud to support them.
Well, look, they're known as the Lily Whites, the Whites, the Invincibles. You were very modest about when they were champions. They actually were unbeaten in English football's inaugural season. They've not won a trophy since the FA Cup in 1938. So they're on a bit of a drought, Wade. They're currently in the third tier of England's football's League One. It's kind of like the double A equivalent. But can you describe what the team means to you inside the beating heart of Bad News Barrett?
You know, I've supported them since I was a little kid, and my family's all from the Preston area. My dad has followed the team since the 50s. Tom Finney being England's best player at the time, he was playing for us. He played for us for his whole career. Unfortunately, he passed away last year. And he's really the big hero from the town. We've got statues of him there and stuff like that. But, you know, wherever I go in the world, I always make sure I check out Preston's results every week, every Saturday. I'm following them online, and whenever I can get a game, if they're playing in the FA Cup or something like that, occasionally we get a televised game, and I'll try and catch that on wherever I am in the world, on like an internet stream or something like that. So it's not easy keeping up to date with a smaller club in the UK. It'd be a lot easier if I followed a Premiership team. But I don't know. I think once you found out that this is your team when you're 9 or 10 years old or whatever it is, and your dad's taking you to a bunch of games, you can't really change. You're kind of with them forever then. It's just an integral part of you.
And Tom Finney was a remarkable human being. Preston North End also gave the world Sam Allardyce. I'm surprised you don't have statues of him around Preston. They'd be enormous statues, enormous. But it is a question a lot of our listeners ask. When you support a lower league club, do you develop kind of an emotional connection to a Premier League team, or does that feel forbidden, like footballing polygamy?
I have a kind of vague affiliation with the two Liverpool teams, Everton and Liverpool. I went to university in the city of Liverpool back in the late 90s, early 2000s. So I definitely have an affinity for that city. So if I'm going to look out for anybody in the Premiership, it's definitely Everton and Liverpool. But really, you know, my team is always going to be Preston North End, and if Preston ever somehow come head to head with an Everton or a Liverpool, it's always going to be Preston that I'm following.
You're getting me excited, Wade. I think we should buy him. By the end of this conversation, I'm going to go halves with you, and we're going to invest in Preston North End. It's football.
I don't know how much money you're making. It must be more than me. It might have to be a bit different than half.
How much money would we need? $27. I'm looking in my pocket. Is football popular in the wrestling world, Wade?
It seems to be pretty popular with a certain section of the locker room. So pretty much all the guys from Europe, like there's obviously myself. We've got an Irish guy here called Seamus. We got a guy called Rusev. He's from Bulgaria. We got a guy from Switzerland called Cesaro. They're all football fans. And then we've also got a bunch of guys from Mexico. And they all seem to be football fans too. In terms of the actual American guys in the locker room, it's very slim pickings, and they tend to stick more towards their basketballs and their NFL and stuff like that.
A question from one of our listeners, at Pat All Day. At Wade Barrett, if your locker room had a pick-up soccer game, who would be your top three picks off the board?
Top three picks off the board. Well, number one, I'd have to pick myself. I'm clearly the best player in WWE. I actually got to train with Preston North End last year, so that was a lot of fun. I went and had a kick about with some of the guys and got involved in a practice session, and they aired that on Sky Sports, so that was a lot of fun. So definitely I'd be on the team. I'd have to pick Big Show. If you don't know who Big Show is, he's a 7'4" giant of a man. He's 500 pounds. And I definitely put him in goal. He'd be pretty hard to score past. I'm trying to think who else I would pick on top of that. Probably, perhaps Sin Cara. He's a Mexican guy, and you know, he's got very fast feet. He's a very agile guy, so I'll probably stick him up top in kind of the Lionel Messi type of role.
No room for Kendo Nagasaki. I'm a little bit surprised, Wade.
Yeah, he's not in WWE. I think you might be dating yourself a little bit there. He's going back to the 70s and 80s. I don't know if he's out there.
We need some experience in any five-a-side team.
Maybe he could be the manager.
Your real name is?
My real name is Stuart Bennett.
Oh, great idea to drop that last name. It would have gotten you nowhere. But where did the name Wade Barrett come from? Does WWE have some kind of generic British name generator?
No, it's actually, they have to, basically for copyright purposes, they like to own the name because it's, you know, the name Wade Barrett or Bad News Barrett that I'm wrestling at now. That's basically a brand for the company. So they like to be able to copyright that and brand their wrestlers they're promoting on TV. So I had to come up with a name and kind of suggest it to them that was different to my own name. And Wade, the Wade part actually came from Wade Dooley.
The rugby player.
Former English rugby player who is also from Preston. I remember hearing the name when I was a kid in the 80s, and I always thought Wade was a cool name. I didn't meet many Wade, so I always remember that as being a cool name. You come to the US and there's a ton of people called Wade, but over in the UK, it's actually a pretty rare name. So that's where I got Wade from, and then the Barrett part was actually suggested to me by a guy who trained me, a guy called Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, who was a huge star in the 70s, 80s, 90s in the wrestling world. So he suggested adding Barrett to it. And so we came up with Wade Barrett and took it from there.
I thought you were named after Sid Barrett.
No, that's not true. I've heard that before, but that's definitely not true.
Who couldn't love a wrestler named for a guitarist who expanded sonic possibilities? But now you've got me worried that Yaya Toure, Sammy Amiobi and Danny Drinkwater aren't real names. They're just brands created by their club.
I remember Danny and Vinciblay as well. So that was a pretty cool name. Yeah. Swindon player in the 90s, I think.
But your life story, you mentioned Liverpool. You were at the University of Liverpool 1999. To 2002, you graduated with a degree in marine biology. I read that you worked in science lab by day, Clark Kent, and at night were a fighter, occasionally bare-knuckle brawler, possibly. A little bit Supermanish. Is that true? It's amazing.
It's true, yeah. I mean, I've had a pretty varied life so far, and the problem with wrestling or sports entertainment, as we like to call it in WWE, is that when you're at the lower levels, you really don't earn very much money. It's not particularly popular. It's what we call independent wrestling. And sometimes I'd be wrestling in front of crowds. When I first started off, I'd be wrestling in front of crowds of maybe 20 or 30 people. And you can imagine if you've got a locker room of 20 wrestlers that are putting on this show, by the time you've rented out the building and paid transportation costs and stuff like that, there really isn't much money to go around. So it was kind of a hobby when I started off, and it had to be that way because simply the money wasn't there. So I had to have day jobs at the time to support myself. That's where I was working in science labs and offices and stuff like that, until fortunately I got my break with WWE and pressed them, and they flew me over to the States, and I was able to do it full time.
You were also inspired by Davey Boy Smith.
Yeah, absolutely. He was from Wigan. He was the
British
when I
Bulldog.
First started, the British Bulldog, David Roy Smith, that's him. He was a big star in the early 90s. And as a kid, to see all these crazy Americans running around and fighting each other in face paint and stuff like that, and then to see that there's one British guy there who sounded the same as I did and was from just down the road from where I was from. And, you know, it was very inspirational for me to see that a guy like that could make it over there in WWE. So there's definitely something there that probably propelled me in that direction. And, 100%, he was my favourite.
It's how Americans must feel when they see Jeff Cameron take the field in the English Premier League. I must say, I grew up watching wrestling on a Saturday afternoon. It wasn't all glitz and glam like in America. It was English wrestling. It was very working class. I don't know if you remember it, the wrestlers like Giant Haystacks, Big Daddy, Jim Breaks, Alan Kilby.
Yeah, Mick McManus, I met him very early in my career. Yeah, I definitely remember it, and it's a huge leap from what you see now with WWE, and in a lot of ways it's a real shame that kind of wrestling died out, because I think the two could have coexisted. But I think ultimately the production levels of WWE just blew the British wrestling out of the water. It seemed very small time in comparison to these highly polished, highly produced WWE shows that we were seeing on TV, when guys like Hulk Hogan and The Ultimate Warrior and David Roy Smith were coming down. It then to flick over and see some pasty-skinned, kind of out-of-shape guy sometimes in the British wrestling, it kind of turned a lot of viewers off. Unfortunately, the biggest drop, and for business reasons, they had to make a decision to cut it.
I've got to say, when I was a kid, 6 or 7, it was on every Saturday afternoon. I'd watch as if it was like the forces of good and evil colliding. I had no idea it wasn't for real, and I couldn't work out for the life of me why there was no coverage of it ever in the newspapers. But it gave an incredible tradition of British heels. You're kind of slightly heelish.
I'm completely heelish. I've, since I've come to WWE, which is now, I've been on TV with WWE for 5 years now, and I've been the bad guy consistently throughout that period of time. So yeah, that's something I enjoy doing. I do like being the bad guy. Not everyone's cut out for it. Some people are more suited to being the good guy, the baby face, as we call them. But I've always liked being the bad guy, especially being an Englishman in America. People tend to like the good ones.
How like your character are you? Is there a gap between the two of you?
I'd say my character is probably the worst 10% of my normal self. So if you take the absolute worst of me, just that little bit that everyone on a bad day can get to, that's probably my character in a nutshell.
I'm going to give that answer an incredible amount of thought, and get back to you. But can you make the argument, because I believe this a little bit, that the heel plays the most important role in sports emotionally for fans?
I mean, I think it's really a 50-50 thing. I mean, you can't have a good guy without a bad guy because, you know, the better a bad guy is at being a bad guy, the more people want to see the good guy beat him up. So the better I can be as a bad guy, the more I can get people hating me, the more our good guy is going to be loved. So it's definitely a bad balancing act. And, I mean, it's the bad guy is equally as important as the good guys.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, the French writer Roland Barthes, he wrote an essay called The World of Wrestling. He said, for a fan, nothing is finer than the revengeful fury of a betrayed fighter who throws himself not on a successful opponent, but on the smarting image of foul play. In soccer, as in wrestling, it's not just the unpredictability that thrills the viewer, but there's the emotional hook, keeping the audience glued to the game, desperate for the evildoer to be defeated, not just to lose, but to be made to pay. I'm thinking of like the Mourinhos, the Suarez's, the Balotelli's, the John Terry. When you watch football, do you feel closer to the heelish football characters?
You know, I'm a very, very big Joey Barton fan, so I must be. I think he's just this great personality that you just love to hate, and people love to see him just, you know, get sent off or whatever it is. Same with Mourinho, too. He's got that smug arrogance that people want to see his downfall, but for some reason, I'm drawn to those people. I want to see them succeed. I get a real kick. You know, Eric Cantona was another one. There's something so smug and arrogant about him, and he knew he was better than everybody else, and he'd pop his collar up, and there's something about that I just think is so cool. And, I've definitely drawn to those guys.
Well, when you're watching the football, Wade, do you like nod knowingly when they, you know, when they do a reaction shot of a Balotelli or a Suarez and they always over remote, they almost like they know the camera's on them. Do you nod and wink and know that they're kind of playing into a vaudevillian role just like a wrestler?
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know if they're doing it intentionally or if they're like, when I say my 10% of my character is what, of my natural character is what you see on TV, I get a feeling that that's just them naturally, 100% of their character is that, and they don't have to play the role. But certainly there's something about it. And, I, you know, sometimes I'll see things that people do and I'll pick up on that and I'll steal certain things, perhaps, you know, certain mannerisms or certain sneers that they do or looks on their face. And I think, wow, that's really annoying. And then I'll think, you know, I could use that in my character and take that with me. And that might help my character.
Can you give us one? Give us one example of a sneer, well, a football sneer.
It's not so much a football sneer, but something I did last week. I was wrestling a guy, and at one point he was kind of reaching around. I had him in a hold, and he was kind of reaching around my face, trying to claw me away from it. So my immediate reaction was to start trying to bite his hand, you know. And that was something I thought about over summer with the whole Luis Suarez thing, and how much the US goes crazy when he was biting people in the World Cup, and obviously his history of biting people. So I thought, great, if I could bite somebody, that'd be amazing. You know? And just little things like that. It's you know, and it's not just football that I'll pick that up from. I'll, you know, sit in an airport and see somebody who annoys me or something like that. You look at something, that guy's really annoying, he's arrogant or whatever, and you just, well, what can I take from that? So it's always a good thing to do as well.
Game recognizes game. Wade Barrett, Luis Suarez. Watch out, America, when you're at the airport there. I'm going to give you a wide berth. Couple of quick questions from some of our listeners. At the Real DA, which current Premier League manager would make the best wrestling heel?
Oh, wow. Which would make the best wrestling heel? It would have to be Mourinho. He's just so cocky, so arrogant. Everything about him just sums up a bad guy, you know. And the fact that he's so successful, too, just annoys people even more. You know, when the bad guy ends up tripping over and falling on his face, then everyone can laugh at him and then you don't hate him so much. But when the bad guy is constantly winning and kids' championships and is good-looking and is cool and is wearing the best suits, then hang on a minute, and now I really hate this guy. So, yeah, the best deal would have to be Mourinho.
Oh, part of me would love to see a tag team of Steve Bruce and Sam Allardyce. They could be as a duo. One could be steak, the other could be kidney. Steak and kidney pie, we could market them as. Oh, they'd wear really tight trunks. It would be almost indecently amazing.
Yeah, I don't think they would fit into WWE, but I think they are perfect candidates to bring back the old world sports style of wrestling from the UK. That's the kind of guys that would be in the ring.
Oh, easy, easy. I've always wanted to ask a wrestler this question. What do wrestlers think of the wrestler? What do you feel emotionally when you watch The Wrestler?
The film The Wrestler?
Randy the Ram Robinson. Two words.
Yeah, you know what? I loved it. I mean, there's varying views on it in the locker room, and I would say the lifestyle depicted in that is massively different to what the reality is in WWE. It's very different.
It's worse in WWE, right?
No, definitely not. It's, I'll get fired if I say that. No, it's a lot better. I mean, we're very corporate here, and we're a very well-behaved organization, obviously. But, I mean, certainly in independent wrestling, that much, some of that that was depicted might be true. But the film itself, I enjoyed it. I think it was really the first big-time serious film that was made about the pro wrestling industry. So it was great when it came out to finally almost have our Rocky, you know, or something we can look to and put on and then feel, wow, that's a great piece of art made about our industry, which to that point hadn't really happened. So, I'm a huge fan of the film.
Oh, we got a lot of young listeners, as you know, I think, on the pod. We like to give them wisdom that can help them benefit day-to-day in their lives. So, Wade, we've had a long-running debate on this show. If you're in a bar fight in a pool hall, should you pick up the cue or the pool balls? Can you please weigh in and end this debate once and for all?
Well, personally, I would definitely use the cue. I think by the time you pick up a pool ball and throw it and miss, then you're in real trouble. So I think definitely picking up the cue, you can have 6 or 7 swings by the time they go to pick up the second ball. So, 100% pick up the cue, unless you have time to take off one of your socks, put the pool ball inside the sock, and then swing it around your head like a mace. Then that might be more useful.
You meant to answer this question, not complicate it further. Now we've got the cue, the pool ball, the pool ball sock combo. This is a debate which is going to build and build to build. When are you coming to New York City, Wade? When are we going to get to see you in the flesh, in the ring, here in Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be in Madison Square Garden in early February. My schedule is always subject to change. I'm currently scheduled to be at MSG in early February. But if you look on WWE.com, we have all our upcoming dates listed on there. We're constantly touring. It's we never get any time off. We don't have an off season. So we're doing about, 8 or 9 shows per week around the world, mainly in the US and Canada. But we regularly do tours. I know you have listeners over in Europe and Japan and stuff like that. But yeah, we're constantly touring around. So take a look on WWE.com and you'll see all our upcoming dates.
Well, when you are in New York, Dave-O and I are going to come down and watch you. To watch you in the flesh would probably be one of the proudest things to be able to do as Englishmen. Absolutely.
Yeah, great. It'd be great to have you along. Bring along some pool cues. I might need some help. I might draft you two in to be in my corner that night.
I'm going
to
start carrying some bundled up socks in my pocket. Save, save some time when the buffoons go for the cues. We'll take them down together, Wade. It is a joy to have you. A lot of our listeners will now be following Preston's doings week in, week out. And we look forward to seeing you in New York, Wade. Thank you so much.
Good deal. Thank you very much, Roger. Appreciate
Godspeed.
It.
Fascinating, Rog.
What a bloke.
Yeah.
I love what he said about taking his worst 10% of his own true character and kind of funneling it into his wrestling persona.
I love that.
It's exactly what I do in the panic room. My worst 10%.
You do.
Really funnel it.
It's so good. Our first Raven, Rog, comes from Melissa Svensson. A question triggered by Mix and Josie and, well, everyone apart from Aaron Johansson returning home to play in MLS. If I'm US Men's National Team Technical Director Jürgen Klinsmann, I'm asking why the exodus and how can I best work with MLS? As you already mentioned, Rog, Jeff Cameron and DeAndre are going to be the only two Americans left in the
Outfield
Premier League.
Outfield players, yeah. I mean, we should also mention Josie. Looks like at time of podcasting, headed home, possibly to Toronto. He departs England with 2 goals in 68 Premier League games. Player that thrives when he's loved, when those around support him.
Yeah.
I think he never felt like in the northeast of England. He will in MLS, and we expect the instinct for goal to return in 2015 for Jose. I've seen him. I saw him in Bosnia, myself and Sarajevo.
Yeah,
amazing hat trick. He will get that back, Davo. But Jose to Toronto, MLS 12.
Yeah,
Jurgen Klinsmann 1.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
what is going on, David?
Well, I think it's what we discussed when Michael Bradley came back, is I think that the quality of living, the standard of life for these guys coming back to MLS, to America, the league has improved, the soccer has improved, and just they can't compare the quality of life they have in Sunderland, Rog, in Sunderland, versus what his life will be like that in Toronto.
Sunderland's great if you love garbage blowing on the field. But it's a sign the tectonic plates are shifting in football. Just when Jurgen proclaimed they have to test themselves in Europe, the plates underneath world football are shifting. Jurgen actually revealed he urged Jose to stay and try and stay in a Champions League caliber team. And he also said Mix had options in Europe, but, quote, none were bigger than Rosenborg. By the way, which I find surprising, because I always play Mix Discarude alongside Aaron Johansson in my FIFA 15 team. But you're right, Americans love America.
Yeah.
I can remember being on kibbutz.
But it's not surprising. We've been to the rest of the world, Rog.
Yeah, it's crap. I was on kibbutz in the early 90s. I loved it. I almost went to agricultural school and became a cowhand professionally. But the Americans there, they hated it. And the root cause for their hatred, Dave, can you guess what it was?
Lack of good food options?
Almost. The lack of two-ply toilet paper.
Wow.
They would have it shipped over by their parents in suitcases, hundreds of rolls of toilet paper.
Uh-huh.
Chafe buttocks undermine democracy, apparently. But that's what's happening. I mean, there's now money in the game in the US. Not for everybody, not for the middle and lower tiers of the pyramid. But in the 80s and 90s, if you wanted to make money as a footballer, you had to go to Europe. But now MLS are paying for domestic talent. Just like the EPL transfer fees for English protégés are highly inflated. And when push comes to shove, Americans prefer to live in America than they do in Sunderland or Stoke or Rosenborg. And who can blame them? You only live one life. If you were Jurgen, though, Davo, what would you do? Would you start to wonder whether your constant hectoring that there's always another level and that players have to go to Europe is backfiring, and maybe start to demand they stay in MLS? I think reverse psychology works with human beings in 7 out of 10 instances, doesn't it?
The one thing I've got to say is I do think that these Americans have got to return to MLS and they've got to play very well. Because I think this is going to backfire terribly if they're coming back on these, you know, large salaries. And yes, they'll pack fans into the stands, certainly initially. But if they don't play well, it's going to be very undermining of their confidence and tough for MLS to go and deal with. Obviously, Dempsey's form returned, you know, after his first couple of months back. Landon Donovan was always an outstanding player in MLS. KB5 killing it week after week after week. But we've got to see all of these players who return home actually playing very, very well, or it's going to backfire.
Come on, Gideon!
Yes,
do you think?
Exactly.
By the way, do you think elite American soccer players in Europe may become an extinct species, like the dodo, the dusky seaside sparrow, the great auk, or the heath hen?
Possibly, certainly as MLS continues to grow, and certainly if these players come back do very well, I think we're going to see it happen again and again and again. And certainly, being a fan of the US men's national team, being a fan of MLS, are to a certain extent related, Rog. So in terms of just putting bums on seats at MLS games and driving the TV viewership, that's going to be important. Okay, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Karen Callahan, Rog. I'm a Men in Blazers fan in South Dakota and have a question about the fans who attend the Premier League games. Maybe this has something to do with the issue of the sunglasses, but why are all of the people at the games dressed so drab? Do they only have black coats in England? At American sporting events, you see all different colours of clothing, even winter coats of different colours. But the English fans look like they're on their way to a funeral. Any light you can shed on this issue is much appreciated. As I learnt recently, Rog, very important to keep summer alive in winter in your wardrobe.
Here's my answer.
Yeah.
We're cold.
Yeah.
We're miserable. We're beaten. I actually remember when I was growing up, we only did see black and grey coats growing up.
Yeah.
And it was one of the joys of following Everton and Liverpool into Europe in the 80s. Was that we travelled to the continent and encountered amazing Euro brands like Lacoste and Fila and Kappa, and we stole them. I mean, literally, you go over to these European sports stores, one guy would walk in and divert the shopkeeper, the naive French shopkeeper, and then 20 Scallies would just absolutely steal everything in the shop. We bring it back to Liverpool, all these colours we'd never seen before. Pastels, prime. I remember seeing teal for the first
never
time.
Never seen teal.
I've never seen teal. Ooh, yeah. My eyes, honestly, took time to adjust. But you've also got to understand, in England, a study just came out, 75% of British people suffer from seasonal affective disorder, which they call the winter blues. Such a romantic name for an awful malady, the winter blues. There's very little daylight in England. Look, London doesn't see sunrise until after 8 a.m.
That's
in the morning.
Ridiculous.
And it sets before 4 o'clock.
Wow.
In a city like Manchester, of United and City fame parent company.
But the sky is so close to the ground.
It rains for 193 days a year, 53% of the year. It's dank, Karen. It is. We don't wear bright colours because, as you say, David, we're a nation of mole men.
Yeah, I was going to say shopkeepers. Like, what? But there is this great tradition of soccer casuals dressing very well at football matches. But that's a tiny minority. Britain is a country where you don't want to show off by what you're wearing. And there is this, oh, look at you. Oh, look at you. What you think? You're so fantastic wearing yellow or teal. Or some kind of colour. You don't want to draw attention to yourself in England by wearing a bright colour.
I took my father-in-law to a game of football at Goodison Park, and he turned up wearing a blazer and a cashmere sweater.
Yeah.
And as he said, looked at it, I was like, no. And I did. I got one of my dad's kind of black overcoats, put it on him, and then just said, and by the way, shut your mouth. Do not talk for 90 minutes or we'll both have our teeth kicked in.
Yeah.
There is something in that, David.
It's very, very true. Okay, Rog, we've got a live show coming up on February 5th.
Oh, I can't wait. We're going to give a golden blazer.
John Johnson, award-winning producer of A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, will be producing it again, Rog. We're in safe hands.
Oh, thank
and we
God.
Will put together an operatic orchestra of Broadway choirists to sing football-related songs of your choice. So, scribes, send us... Oh, it's a competition, Roger. Love a competition. Send us your best football zeitgeist, Broadway-ish song about anything you want.
So write us your lyrics, match them to any kind of song, as long as they're about football. You can what do they win, David?
Well, the winner will be presented with a custom US Stars and Stripes Xbox created by our friends at EA Sports FIFA. There are only two in the world. A picture is on our website. The Men in Blazers custom edition has the legend Courage Dominate Tweed down its side. Enter now. You have 2 weeks to win. God, so many ideas for songs, Rog.
Could
be about Jurgen.
Going mad at the ingathering of US talent from Europe.
Yeah, the Trenton Thunder's Frank Lampard.
His clear hatred of America.
Or Louis van Gaal's inner voice, Rog.
It'd be a tough act to follow to beat Julia Foo's Carol of the Commentators to the tune of Carol of the Bells that won our last competition. But let them reign. Or to all the GFOP Stephen Sondheims out there.
It's not Broadway related, but I've been, every time Harry Kane scores, I find myself humming along to Athlete's Hurricane and singing Harry Kane every time he scores. I think that one could catch on. But it wouldn't win this competition because it's not Broadway enough.
John it could. You can do it to any. Could
oh,
do,
you can. You could do it to pop music.
You do John Cale's Cocaine if you want to.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
No problem.
Perfect. Okay, Roger, your weekend looks like this. QPR versus Man U, 10 a.m. Saturday on NBCSN. Newcastle versus Sunderland. Ooh, the North East Derby,
Roger. Will be garbage. There will be garbage.
That's 12:30 Saturday on NBC, on the network. Manchester, could be. Football could be over. Football in America could be over after that's on the network. Manchester City versus Arsenal. That's the big game this weekend, Rog.
Oh,
11 a.m.
Psychies.
Sunday on NBCSN. Chelsea go to Swansea. Tough game for them this weekend. Okay, there are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go to Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page and Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage. It allows us to cover the costs of creating the show. Keeps us with that Instax film for our little Instax camera that Lexi is using right now. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
Book.
What book? You love books.
Department of Speculation by Jenny Offal.
Wow.
Given to me on vacation.
Uh-huh.
It's the kind of book I would never, ever, ever normally read, but I'm so glad that I did.
You love it.
All I can say is it's magnificent. And for any bloke who's about to have a baby, this has to. Everyone reads What to Expect When You're Expecting, which is crap.
Mm-hmm.
This book will not teach you how to change a diaper, but it'll make you think about what happens from the POV of your wife or partner. It's required reading for all males.
Great. Well, you love books. I love sneakers, Rog. I'm putting in the Adidas Samoas. I bought a pair of Adidas Samoas. I mean, I owned Samoas years ago. It's a classic, 1982 classic Adidas sneaker. A lot of people wear the Stan Smiths these days, Rog. A lot of people wear the Campus. A lot of people wear the Gazelle.
I'm a Rod Laver kind of
guy. Yeah, you like the Lavers, but I love the Samoa. Not quite sure what it was invented for. I mean, Samoa and sport is really usually about rugby, and it's a very durable shoe. It could be a rugby training shoe. We're not quite sure. We're trying to do some more research on it. But the Adidas Samoas, they're available in black with a white three-stripe. They're also available in white with a black stripe, and I think there are some other colours available, and we've put that up on Amazon. I love the Samoas. Another way to connect to us, go to meninblazers.wickerspaces.com. It's a wonder of the modern world, Rog. Find out all about us, understand our references, especially if you're a new listener. You can find everything about us on meninblazers.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there. Follow us on Twitter at MC Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers. On Instagram, that's Men in Blazers. I started a new Instagram, Rog. That's at embassy_Davies. And go and visit our Facebook as well. We've got a subreddit, Men in Blazers. .reddit.com. That's maintained by GFOP's Akshay, Calvin and Alex. And we now have a Spotify account, Rog. You can search Men in Blazers. It has our very first Men in Blazers mixtape. It's a collection of songs near and dear to us.
You send us your suggestions for the show, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Mondays, and we will send you a spotter's patch.
Well, that patch, it's a wonderful new shape for us, Rog. And you can always email meninblazers@gmail.com. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. But it is cold here in New York, so bear that in mind. Perhaps put a little sweater on your raven before you send him or her.
I just want to thank Jen Simons. Jen Simon, I like to call her.
Yeah.
JW, yeah. Lexi, Aaron, yeah. For yeah. producing not just the show, but all of our suboptimal crap.
Yeah. Couldn't do it without them. In fact, they'd be way better at doing it, certainly than me, Rog. That's it for us. Vendepunkt.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Matumbo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Creme de la crap.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, Dave-o.